Welcome to the Prime Flix Podcast. My name is Ed. With me today, as always, is Dean.
Hey, I'm always here.
Dean is always here.
It's true.
Dean the ever-present.
Well, I had some stuff going on at home.
Well,
I didn't want to talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, no, yeah.
We're here, so let's talk about
it. Okay, yeah. Well, so what's going on?
Well, I thought that the leftover pizza was for everybody.
Okay. And you ate the leftover pizza?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
It turns out the leftover pizza was not leftover.
Okay.
In fact, it was pizza pre-made to be cooked at a later date by my spouse.
Okay, back up. So you ate a raw pizza?
Well, it was leftover in my mind.
Uh-huh. Like leftover from being cooked.
Yeah.
Someone just decided, you know what? This pizza's not worth cooking. Let's just leave it over here by the radiator.
Right.
Was it left over somewhere out of the way, or was it like...
Well, it was left over in the left side of the fridge.
But it wasn't cooked yet.
Well, I didn't know that.
Okay.
At the time.
Yeah.
I know that now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, circumstances have come to light.
Mm-hmm. So...
So now I'm on your couch.
So things are not good and you're on the couch. You're now eating my leftover pizza.
Well, you leave pizza in the fridge. I assume it's for everybody.
Did you buy it, though? That's a good thing to ask yourself first before you delve into any leftovers. In even the show, the HBO show, The Leftovers, you know, just make sure you bought it first.
And then
if you didn't buy it first, then ask.
Okay. Well, who am I going to ask? I mean, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You're at work.
Uh-huh.
I'm just sitting here.
I mean, but I do work from home, so you just have to yell in the other room.
I mean, I don't want to disturb you.
Well, you know what?
In the office.
Well, let's focus on the matter at hand here, which is...
That I'm always here.
That's the subtext of this.
Okay.
I would say that the main plot of this episode, as it were, is to discuss a couple of films. What would you say about that?
Well, these two films I feel like you selected to talk to me about my fridge stealing.
So that came through.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because that's kind of what I was going for. Because both of the movies we're going to talk about today have theft as a pretty big plot point.
Okay, but if the jewels are for everybody...
What jewels?
The jewels in the movie.
Okay.
If they're for everybody.
But they're not.
We don't know that.
We do. They're owned by the people whose houses they were in.
I gotta say, I kind of side with the thieves on this one.
Well, let's start with that film then. So I believe the movie you're referencing, well, it could be either of them, actually.
Could be either.
Yeah, that's true. Either, whichever. I think... let's start with Robot and Frank.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about Robot and Frank. Robot and Frank is a movie, both of these movies actually came out in 2013. Do you say 2013 or 2013?
I say 20.
Yeah, I think that's better.
Because, come on.
Yeah.
It's been a while since the aughts.
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Oof, man.
I'm over it.
I am too.
Mm-hmm.
So Robot and Frank is available currently. On
right now?
As of recording.
Cool.
We could watch it right now, but we already did, so we don't have to.
On
both streaming services that we regularly discuss in this podcast.
Yes.
Amazon Prime.
Yep.
Hence the Prime. Netflix, hence the Flix.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Flix. On both. So you could watch it on either service right now.
And you don't have to steal it.
You do not have to steal
it. Those movies are for everybody.
They are for everybody, if they have the service.
Okay.
Yeah. So, close. For every member, paying member, they are for everybody.
Okay.
If everybody includes only those who paid.
I think it does.
Yeah. So Robot and Frank has a 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb.
Ooh.
An 86% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ooh.
And a 67% on Metacritic.
Mm.
A little bit lower.
Yeah, it's a little lower.
It's about an ex-burglar, very successful one from what we assume.
Retired.
Named, I forget what his character's name is in the movie. He's played by Frank Langella. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Langella?
Yeah.
Okay.
Frank Langella.
Frank Langella. So Frank lives by himself, and his kids have, you know, grown up and are living elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they know that he's having maybe some trouble. He's kind of maybe getting early stages of dementia or Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is some set in the future. We're not sure where.
The near future,
or how far in the future, but near-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Not 100 years, but more than a year.
Right.
And it's interesting because what he decides to do, his son decides to get him a robot to help him.
A robot butler,
like Mr. Butlertron.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite robot butlers.
Mm-hmm.
From the show Clone High, which
that
you should check out.
That premise is fresh.
Fresh. If you've never seen Clone High, find it somewhere and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult to find, but it's good. great butler, just like this butler. And Frank discovers a hole in the robot's programming that I'm sure that the programmers did not intend, that it doesn't quite understand right and wrong.
Well, it is only programmed for Frank's health.
For his health.
So anything beyond that, it's capable of.
Exactly.
So if he convinces the robot that burglarizing is better for his health, the robot goes along with it.
Right, because the robot sees it as an activity he can plan and that he can improve his cognitive ability and keep his mind fresh. And he also, he regularly, you know, as a throwback to him being an older guy, goes to the library. This place that's a subplot that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I'd like to get into some of that.
Mm-hmm. To the librarian played by Susan Sarandon, who for like half the movie, I felt like I was Frank and I couldn't think of what her name was. I was like, I know who that is. It's not Sigourney Weaver, but I know it's something with an S.
Yeah.
And so I got it about halfway through. And he regularly, he's kind of got a little crush on her and he goes to see her. And interestingly later, we find out something interesting about her. It's sort of a pretty big reveal,
right,
in the film. And his daughter is played by Liv Tyler. She's off in Burma or something trying to save the world. And then also the robot's voice, I was very happy to find,
right,
was voiced by Peter Sarsgaard.
You don't realize it the whole movie, and then you see the credits.
I kind of did, though.
Did you? Oh,
and I thought, wow, what a perfect robot voice, because
yeah,
he has
really
so
great.
flat emotion in his voice that is perfect. But yeah, so I know I really like this film.
I also liked it.
You did? Yeah. What was your, what did it make you want a robot? Because it made me want a robot.
Oh, like definitely made me want a robot.
Oh yeah.
I mean, somebody who can cook and clean.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been kicked out of my house,
mm-hmm,
presumably because I disrespected my wife's cooking.
Well, but she hadn't even cooked at that point, so.
Well,
you disrespected
debatable.
The future prospect of her cooking because she just couldn't do it.
Okay, well, I mean, I thought it was for everyone, but she was the one that cooked,
mm-hmm,
and so now that I'm living here, I think that the robot could cook.
That's true. I could use a robot roommate.
Yeah,
he would be doing stuff around the place.
Right. Yeah.
Productive.
Wouldn't that be
things.
Great?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, he'd be living rent free, like someone else I know, but at least he would actually contribute.
Yeah, it would be really wonderful. You really need a roommate that contributes.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll find you one.
Oh, thank you.
The story is really simple, right?
Absolutely.
It's the story of the guy and dealing with his mental issues and his family issues, but also trying to reclaim the past in honor of all that is good about the past. Right.
Yes.
So
there's a lot of nostalgia.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing, one of the first things we actually see him, or the first thing we actually see him successfully steal with the robot, is Don Quixote, mm-hmm, a very, very famous copy of Don Quixote. And
well, technically, he steals the bar of soap first, right?
Yeah, but the first
not intentionally.
The first thing he steals with the well, that's right. The robot helps him. That's
the robot
how he
takes
realizes,
it because he thinks is that he. That's how he finds the flaw.
Yeah. And I think that just goes to symbolism.
Yes, of
because it's a very quixotic story.
Yeah, that's very true. Yes, he's going at those windmills with all of his
bike. Yeah, I mean you're seeing his whole way of life fade, right? He's not he can't fend for himself any longer.
Right.
He needs a robot.
He's losing
his memory. Mm-hmm. He's losing the library, which is presumably the only good thing that he has left.
Yep.
His favorite restaurant has been gone for something like 15 years.
Yes, they do mention that a couple times.
He's battling time.
Yes.
You know, in this very
time always wins
method. And you know, he's got these outlandish plans, and the robot is essentially his squire.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that, but he's his trusty squire.
Yep.
Following him even though he and do you think that, I mean, if you could step inside the mind of the writer for this, do you think that was, I mean, that entirely intentional? Or do
oh,
you
yeah.
think? Yeah.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, okay. Sometimes I never know. I mean, it seems so on the nose.
Right.
And you wonder if you approach them if they would say, oh, I didn't realize that. Or, I mean, I wanted this parallel, but didn't
right.
see that one.
So it could be one of two ways. It could be that the writer was thinking of Don Quixote the whole time. Or it could be that the writer wrote the story and then went back to the library and changed the name of the book.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That could be. Because he has the option of stealing a very rare copy of Jane Eyre as well, and he passes on that.
Well, who would do that?
Well, I don't know. Who's Jane? I don't know.
She's full of air.
Hot air. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like the whole movie's like a fairy tale.
Yeah,
and I love that about it.
That's true.
It's really sweet and very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a simple story. Mm-hmm. There are maybe six characters in the whole story.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think the title even is very simple: Robot and Frank. Like it's very. That's a great title. For this
and what does it tell you? It tells you there's a robot and there's a guy named Frank.
Yeah,
and that's the entire movie.
Yep, exactly. I really did enjoy this. I remember seeing. I never heard about this movie when it came out, and I was watching a film at my parents' house, and they still get the Netflix by mail DVDs too.
Okay,
and so we watched some previews, and I saw a preview for this movie, and my parents aren't very good with technology and the internet, so a lot of times I'll add movies to their Netflix queue for them. They'll say, can you add this movie or that
right.
movie? And then they just get them. And they said, oh, add this one. You
okay.
know? And my mom was the one, my dad and my mom really wanted to see it. But my mom was in Florida and my dad watched it. And he did not like it at all.
Oh, really?
And I don't know why. I mean, my dad's a pretty moral guy. So mm-hmm. the main character being a thief probably didn't sit well with him. Obviously, you know, my dad's older too. So I don't know if it was like too close to home, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see if you were of a certain age watching this movie, like I don't know who the target audience of this movie is, if it's necessarily I think an older person would look at this movie very different relative to a younger person.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was rolling around in the back of my head too. So I don't know, what did you have any other things?
Well,
that come
up? Yeah, so we mentioned, you know, it's an older person fighting for their way of life.
Yeah.
but it's also younger people fighting for the health of the older person.
Yes, and over what's best for dad.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely. Which I can't even imagine having to make that decision. That's really tough. And I thought they approached it really well. I mean, they had two really believable children.
Yes.
I mean, the one was self-righteous but distant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is always the path of the self-righteous.
Oh, right, yes.
And then the other one was always around but resentful.
Yeah. I got to deal with all of this all the time.
Yep.
I'm always here. I take the trips. I do. Yeah.
And I really liked both of those portrayals.
Yeah.
But they still love their father.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But the other theme that we haven't thought about is this sort of And he almost says it in the movie. Mm-hmm. This sort of yuppie versus like the native town inhabitants.
Yeah.
You know, I think he gets the audience on his side when he's going after these yuppies that moved in to the area, you know, and disrespect him, disrespect the library, disrespect like everything that he's about.
Yep, exactly. They're very easy targets, and it's important in this type of story to have that.
Yeah.
Because it is a morally questionable thing he's doing, and so you have to, as an audience member, feel like the person deserves it. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I was talking with someone about this the other day that... that's my problem, I think, a lot of times with biopics as stories. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a little bit off track, but follow me here. Biopics have to follow the truth as it is. And
more or less.
In the world, yeah. And they have some leeway, but for the most part, if you change big things like outcomes,
right,
it doesn't work out that well for the filmmaker, because people say, oh, you're making up fiction and, you know, you're fictionalizing something that actually happened. And they're unsatisfying as stories because the real world is more complicated than a story. And, you know, I think and I'm not a scholar of fiction, but I've watched a lot of it. I think that you always have to either see the character be, learn a lesson, triumph, or be punished. Mm-hmm. Right. Those are like the three things that have to happen. And if the person who deserves to be punished doesn't get punished, if the person that needs to learn a lesson doesn't want a lesson, or the person that should triumph doesn't, it's really disappointing as a person, right? As a person watching the film, because you want your cinema and your media to be less or more straightforward.
Well, it's escapism.
Escapism,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you want what can't happen necessarily in real life to happen on the screen.
Yeah.
So you can feel good about it.
Right. Yeah. I remember I watched the movie Zodiac with mm-hmm. my friend, who was completely unaware that it was based on a true story where they never caught the killer.
Right.
Right. And so we got down to the end of that like 2.5 hour David Fincher movie. And she goes, what? They never caught this guy? Like, yeah, he's the Zodiac killer. It's like a famous,
it's
unsolved.
Famous.
Yeah. thing. And it just completely embodied that. It was like, yes, this is... You know, and so I do think in a simple piece of fiction like this, it's incredibly satisfying to see this crazy looking yuppie couple get robbed of all this stuff they shouldn't have anyway. Like, who needs that necklace, right?
Exactly.
Like, you know, and he gets away, and I'm doing the air quotes here that I prefer to do on the podcast.
Right. I can see them.
Yeah, you can see them. So I couldn't give higher recommendations for this film. I very enthusiastically recommend it.
You know, one of the things I really liked about this is the music.
Mm.
The music was kind of this this synth mixed with strings.
Okay.
All throughout the film, mm-hmm. and in the parts where it was, you know, more yuppie, you could tell like they had more like it wasn't a nice marriage of the two, mm-hmm. but in the rest of the film where it was just his day to day, it was a really nice marriage of the two, sort of saying, you know, sort of mimicking the relationship between him and his technology.
Yeah.
Him and his robot, you know, and as well, it also felt like it was future music without being so far removed from where we are, which I think is true of all of the technology in the movie. Like everything that was in the movie I could see happening in the next 10-15 years.
The funny thing, that's definitely the wrong word, the sort of tragic thing or emotional thing about the movie that I thought was interesting and had that air of sci-fi-ness to it was his reticence to wipe the memory of the robot.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and it's like, the robot, you know, in its Peter Sarsgaard voice says, Frank, you know that if I wipe my memory, it doesn't matter to me.
That's not bad. That's not a bad impression.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, Frank, I am a robot. I don't care if you wipe my memory. Wipe my memory. Like, the robot is actually telling him to do it.
Right.
You know, and he can't do it because he feels like he would lose the, you know, whatever is in the robot that he's culled from this experience of, you know, being his buddy.
He's giving the robot a soul where it doesn't it doesn't perceive itself as having one.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could go really deep into this, but I think that's one of the interesting things about human beings is that, you know, there's all this stuff about Turing tests and things like that. But humans are very quick to ascribe human-like qualities to a non-human thing. Mm-hmm. Like, people are worried that, oh, if we create a robot, people won't relate to it. You can make a robot that looks like a trash can, and if it makes beeps and boops that sound kind of anthropomorphic, like, all of a sudden people go like, oh, he's laughing, he's funny. Right. You know, like, it's so, we're so quick to see another animated object as, I mean, that's why like cartoons work for humans,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You just see like lights on a screen and we go, oh, that's Mickey Mouse.
Yep.
Mickey Mouse is a thing where I wear a shirt and go to whatever. So like, I can definitely see that in when the robot looks more like, it looks like a little kid. Like,
yep.
You know,
it's his little buddy.
Yeah.
He puts clothes on it at one point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah. Speaking of which, that little bing that you heard was me getting an email.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good example.
Uh-huh.
Of how technology is interfering with our lives. Well, right in the middle of our podcast, a little bing.
Yeah, that's true.
Frank wouldn't put up with this.
I'm glad to see that, you know, you took the time to adequately prepare for this podcast, and that it tells me that you take it seriously. That
it's true.
You would, you know, not silence your email notifications.
Well, you know, it was left over. I thought it was for everyone.
Well, yeah. So, as enthusiastically as we recommended this, we also had another film in our sort of larceny-themed podcast today called The Bling Ring, which, unlike Robot and Frank, is based on real-life events. And famously, maybe the only movie I've ever seen that's based on a Esquire article. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that.
In the credits, the opening credits, the very last line is, based on the Burglars War... some brand. I don't know
Louboutins.
What the brand is.
Louboutins.
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 I don't know.
I saw the title.
Yeah.
That stood out to me. I did not see that it was based on...
An article in Esquire magazine.
Interesting.
Which explains why it's so thin. but let's, before we get to there, let's give the particulars. It came out again, like I said, in 2013. Not as stellar ratings in IMDb, 5.6 out of 10, 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, 66% on Metacritic. So still kind of fresh by their standards, these rating, you know, above 50%, but not stellar.
Good.
Yeah, not great. Directed by Sofia Coppola, famous for directing Lost in Translation.
Yes.
Correct? Obviously related to Francis Ford Coppola, the other director that may have made some movies once a while.
Yeah, he's a hack.
Yeah, he's kind of, I mean, he's all washed up. She also made, what, The Virgin Suicides, I think was
the
movie
correct.
She made. She's kind of, I guess, in a sense, at least from the perspective of, you know, the types of movies she's making movies that feature female protagonists. Which is, you know, for better or worse, in this case, worse, I guess, because they're kind of the characters' constitutions. I don't know it's the best portrayal of women, but at least they're being in leading roles and, you know, and
I would actually argue that this is not one of the female characters' movies. This movie is actually told from the perspective of the single male character.
That is true. I thought of it as a collective, but it really is from like his perspective.
Yeah.
And in real life, I believe he ratted them all out.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that they're talking about.
That he really, once they got him under the gun, he just gave everything up. Whereas, you know, maybe he had confessed to things they hadn't even accused him of. So, but in this story, for those of you who haven't seen the film, it's about a bunch of high school students who live in Hollywood and through the internet and following celebrity culture realize that when someone like Paris Hilton is at Fashion Week in London, they can Google her address or through some combination of searching, find her address, walk into her house, which apparently has very poor security, and take whatever they want.
I'll bet you it has better security now.
It probably does. And I bet this whole situation has been great for the securities industry in
Los Angeles,
which
area.
I would assume was already great, but apparently
you'd think so.
Not. But I do think that sometimes people who have a lot of money, they just don't even, it doesn't even fathom they're living a different plane.
Sure.
That they don't know that, like, people just give them the stuff, yeah. right? So, like, why would someone come and take it?
Right.
You know? It's an interesting point.
I think they indict that culture a little bit in this movie.
They do. They try to intersperse some of the TMZ stuff, and they do try to kind of, it's victimless crimes kind of stuff.
Yeah. So just to finish up the plot, they Google their houses,
yeah.
and then these teenagers sneak in and steal a bunch of stuff.
Right, they do. Yeah, they go and take what they want. Yep.
And they eventually they're caught.
They hit a bunch of celebrities' names, some of whom I know who they are, some of whom I don't.
Yeah.
Which just probably shows my age more than anything. But they get caught ultimately by just kind of being dumb.
Terrible at what they do.
Yeah. So it's... It's not, going back to what I just said about satisfying fiction and this being based on a story.
Yeah.
Is that nothing here satisfies the viewer.
Agreed.
The characters don't learn anything.
Nope.
I don't think they're adequately punished, right?
Meh.
And
yeah.
if they do triumph...
Well, yes, because they sentence them to a number of years, but they don't serve a number of
right,
years that we know of.
And even then, it's, you know, they steal however many million dollars worth of stuff, maybe, or $100,000 worth of stuff,
yeah.
and they're put in jail for... Yeah.
But they are punished monetarily.
Yeah. Yes,
that's
true.
That's, they have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of fines.
Right. So, yeah... And you know, and maybe it's interesting also on that level, because again, we're talking about people who, if these people hadn't bragged about it, if they hadn't been on security cameras, may have never noticed that any of this stuff was
yep.
gone, because they portray, and I wonder actually how much of like the Paris Hilton setup is what her house is really like.
Right.
It looks like a shopping mall. Like,
yeah.
There's so many shoes. There's so many. Like, I have no idea. Unless she's, like, some kind of weird savant who knows every little, like, piece of jewelry she has.
She wouldn't notice.
She would never notice.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it almost makes you kind of question, like, well, okay, what was the, who was the victim? And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say there are times in watching them rifle through the things of reality stars where I went, well, at least these kids are doing something to earn what what they're taking, right? They're breaking into this place and like trying to be sneaky.
Yeah.
Whereas these reality stars are just kind of falling into all of this stuff. Now, that simplifies things a little bit too much.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and one of the characters it really admires a certain celebrity.
Yeah, and she admires Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah. yeah. But wants that, doesn't want, I don't think the...
She doesn't want the career.
Yeah,
she wants the
fame.
The trappings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. Let's step away from the main story of what actually happened.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the actual, the acting, the filmmaking parts of this movie.
Yes.
What did you take away from it? Was there anything that...
Well, it may surprise you to learn, mm-hmm. this film is only 90 minutes long.
It did not feel 90 minutes long.
It felt like 3 hours long.
It did.
I thought it was done about halfway through, and and it wasn't.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed by that.
Yep.
It was very long. There was no depth to any of these characters.
Yep.
And I think that was partially intentional.
Yeah.
I think that they were trying to, as much as they indicted kind of celebrity culture, they indicted sort of youth culture.
Yes.
Around that celebrity.
Right.
And
obsession with fame.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But like, that doesn't make for an interesting movie.
Yeah.
You know, some of these characters have to have something about them.
Right. I mean, and they would just hint at it very, very slightly.
So lightly,
yeah. Like the main character, you know, I say main character because I think she's top bill, but she's not she's the girl who's the best friend of the main character, the guy.
Yes, and she's the ringleader of the bling ring.
The bling ring leader. And she has no redeeming qualities as far as I can tell from the way they portray her, which is, you know, definitely by design, because I think she is the villain of this piece. If there is,
there is one. She kind of skips town.
Yep.
When she knows the heat is on.
Yep, totally. As much time as they spend with the main character, Mark, we still don't know
much
about
him.
No idea
who he is.
Yeah.
We assume he's gay.
Yeah.
Based on maybe one little comment and the fact that he likes to wear women's shoes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he could still be straight and want to wear women's shoes.
It's true. It's true.
And it doesn't really matter. It's just that that's the only thing we know about him.
Absolutely.
And, it's really...
Well, that's every one of the characters. The other girl, she's got some kind of weird relationship going on with this club owner guy.
Right.
Hermione has, you know, she's like wants to be a model. Right?
Yeah. I think she's the one that has the most driving, you know, sort of desire to be a celebrity.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, to be
in celebrity culture.
For a reason. Yeah. I think the main character wants to be famous, but like in reality show style fame, you know what I mean? Like the, I don't remember what her
character is. The Hills or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Rebecca, I think, is her name. That's another thing. I will say you are not the only one who has trouble remembering their names, because they barely even mention them until they're subpoenaed.
Yeah, yeah.
Or their warrant.
Yeah, it just was it was a strange factual type of, okay, here's a here's everything that happened. You're watching it, but there's no story to it. Like,
yeah.
Like I could write the screenplay for this, because there's just a lot of
zero dialogue.
Yeah. Then they take a selfie.
Yeah. And let's intercut some slow mo for no apparent reason. Yeah, it was really weird. I mean, there were scenes that were just in there for no reason. Like there's that scene where Mark is like dancing in front of his computer and smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what it was supposed to mean.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the purpose of it. It didn't move the story along. It was just, and it was kind of a long scene.
Yeah, it's true. What about, so I can think of two side characters in this movie that had at least a little bit of screen time.
Uh-huh.
One is the character that I didn't realize at the time was played by Gavin Rosdale, the lead singer of Bush, the club owner.
Okay.
He just fences some watches for them and lets them into a club.
And I guess he has a relationship with that girl.
Yeah. And I think they were just, cause he got indicted, so they included him in the story.
Unnecessary. You're already whatever.
Because they had caught them for the, Orlando Bloom heist and they tied the watches to him that he sold. Exactly. The other one that at least got a fair amount of screen time, if only was still one note, was Leslie Mann's character as the mother.
Yeah.
She's the mother of Hermione, right? And then the other girl lives with them.
They took her in or something.
Yeah. And they, they're homeschooled based on the principles of The Secret.
Yeah.
that part really made me laugh.
That's the indictment of that, the whole culture right there.
Yeah. Well, and having a family member who lived in that culture and has absorbed some of those principles, I can say that's pretty accurate.
Okay. Too. Fair enough.
And having met a lot of that social network of people out there, it's different. It's a different style of, you know, no offense to our California listeners. I'm sure you're all enjoying your wheatgrass as you listen to this, but it's
delicious.
Well, and good for the colon. It's weird. You know, they say keep Portland weird. I think California is just a weird place in general. I've never been so dumbfounded by how a movie could be made by someone, like with someone who has some movie making cred and has done movies that are good.
Access to this culture.
Yeah. I just did not understand how this movie could be so thin.
Yeah. Like, it was weird.
Yeah.
You know what else was weird? So aside from the fact that the characters are poorly drawn, the
performance is terrible.
Yeah, the horrible animation. Don't go see this movie if you like traditional 2D animation.
Yeah, they're fully 3D.
Yeah, 100%.
And you can't even tell it's drawn.
I can't tell. The performances I actually thought were fine. I thought that the Mark kid was good. Mm-hmm. The Rebecca girl was like
sufficiently narcissistic.
Yeah, but in a believable way. Like yeah. there was nothing about them that stood out to me as like, oh, they're really putting this on.
Yeah.
In contrast to Hermione,
yeah.
whom I thought was really overdone yeah. for this particular role.
Here is something that I'm going to say, and maybe no one disagrees with me, and maybe no one agrees with me. I'm not really sure where people stand in this.
Okay.
No one has convinced me that any of the actors from Harry Potter that were children. Now, we're not talking about Alan Rickman. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about any of the adult actors. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the core, like, let's just say the three core actors.
Yeah.
That they can actually act. Like,
okay.
I get that maybe Daniel Radcliffe has, you know, he, like, did a play, so people think he's legit.
He has song and dance chops.
Yeah. I just don't. I've not seen them in another film, and including the Harry Potter films, where I felt they were doing a good job acting.
I gave up on the Harry Potter series very early on and have not seen any of them act in many, many years. So this is really the first okay. I've seen since she was a very small child.
Yeah.
And what I saw was an actor making a lot of choices.
Mm-hmm.
But those choices not fitting necessarily, or the scale of those choices not fitting necessarily the film that she was in. She looked to me like she was in a different film.
Well, okay, so the scale was off, but you have to remember that she's British, right? So it's maybe like it's in metric units?
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
It's a fair point. When you're acting across the pond, you have to convert.
Right.
And she wasn't converting at
yeah.
all.
Yeah. Whole time I was just thinking, this seems really British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
No, it's not their fault at all.
Yeah, no.
Like, they got fame, they got cast because they fit, like, the look of the kids that they wanted.
And you can't expect a person when they're a child to necessarily become a good actor when they're an adult.
Exactly.
However, I don't think that this movie is representative of her acting ability.
True.
I think that whatever was going on in this movie, it wasn't necessarily a good performance, but it was a good attempt at a performance because the choices she was making were along the line of something I would ask an actor to do for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't quite fit with the rest of the film.
Right, right. I'm trying to think of, and now that I say this, I feel bad because I don't know that I've ever seen her in another film, mm-hmm. Other than the Harry Potter series, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw her play herself in This Is the End, which is where all the people played themselves.
Yep.
So, I mean, she did a great job of playing herself in that.
Okay.
But I
presumably a heightened version.
Yeah. And like,
who are we to say?
Exactly. I know that I've seen, I think his name is Rupert Grint, who played, the bear of H.P. and the Bear, Ronnie
right.
Weasley.
Yep.
I think I have seen him in other things. And again, I can't tell you what they were, so maybe I shouldn't be so harsh on them.
Well, but you're saying no one has convinced you that they're actors.
Yeah, but they're not, and also they're not getting top billing on anything really.
No.
I mean, even Daniel Radcliffe isn't really.
But here's the interesting thing about this particular film.
Yeah,
is that while she didn't get necessarily top billing, she didn't get top billing either.
No,
while she didn't get top billing. If you look at the cover of this of this movie box, you think that she's a star.
Yep.
If you
instead of like
watch,
the seventh listed actor on the
yes.
on the sheet, yeah.
If you watch only portions of this movie, you think that she's the star. she ends the movie even.
Yes.
And it, really her character is a supporting character in like the second supporting character.
Yeah.
You know, it's really weird. Like I felt like the movie couldn't decide whether it wanted to make her the focus or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the scenes that she was in. In the scenes she wasn't in, it was very clear where the focus was.
Like how much do we need to get her on screen
right.
so that we can sell
Are we
her
trying
as...
to like launch her into, you know, more
yeah.
acting roles, or are they trying to sell the movie or what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Very unclear.
I just looked this up, but they're of the other, you know, Harry Potter trio.
Yes.
Daniel Radcliffe was in that Woman in Black movie. I believe that was the name of it.
Okay.
Apparently, he's also filmed a movie with James McAvoy called Victor Frankenstein, where James McAvoy is Frankenstein and Daniel Radcliffe is Igor. And
interesting,
it's told from the perspective of Igor and how he became Igor.
I believe it's Igor.
It's Igor.
What hump?
Do you also pronounce it Frodrick? Yeah. Yeah. For those of you who are unfamiliar with that gag, that's from a wonderful movie called Young Frankenstein.
And if you're unfamiliar with that gag, get off our podcast.
Yeah,
turn this off right now.
Turn it off and go watch the movie and then come back.
Jerks.
It's so funny. I just said Igor without even thinking about it. I just watched that movie recently, actually, too. But so I would recommend that you stay far, far away from this film if you haven't already seen it. If you have seen it, I apologize.
It's not the worst movie ever made.
No, it's not.
It's beautifully shot.
Yeah, no, it's got all the glitz and glamour that it's intended to
Indeed.
Have. All of her movies, though, kind of have that kind of aesthetic to them.
Yeah. But that's no excuse for making a movie.
That's absolutely true. There are plenty of directors out there who have been directing a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying she's one of them, whose movies have nothing to them except glitz.
Yes.
You know, she does have a couple there in her canon that I think are worth watching.
Yes.
I never saw Somewhere. Did you ever see that movie?
No, I did not.
Okay, I think that was her last one before this mm-hmm. one, which is also, I think, about Hollywood mm-hmm. and probably reflects her upbringing.
Yeah.
I did also think it was interesting that one of the characters was played by Vera Farmiga's daughter.
Yeah.
And who I'm pretty sure only gets work because she's Vera Farmiga's daughter.
Maybe.
And it's sort of this nepotism that they're also kind of making fun of in the movie that also might possibly be the reason that Sofia Coppola is a director who gets, she's related to Nicolas Cage, you know that?
I did know.
There you go.
She's probably also related to Talia Shire. And
Shalya
Tyre,
yeah. That's
both
the dark horse.
That's we don't like to talk
the
about
dark
that
sheep of the family. Shalya
Tyre. And Jason Schwartzman. Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
It's a whole clan.
There's a lot of them. It's true. Yeah, I don't have much more to add on the old bling ring.
So how do you feel, having watched both of these movies, how do you feel about burglary? I mean, are you against it still?
Yeah, I'm still against it.
Okay.
I mean, I think Robot and Frank put me kind of on the fence.
Uh-huh.
Like maybe there's some circumstances.
Maybe there's some moral.
In which a man and his robot just want to do some thieving.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really hurting anybody except people that everyone wants to see hurt anyway.
Right.
But then I kind of was like, no, rules are rules.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like when someone has food that someone else isn't supposed to eat without asking.
Well, it's for everybody.
But it's not.
But if it's in the fridge, it's for everybody.
But see, there's one half of the fridge that's for one person, and there's another half of the fridge that's for the other person. And then there's also.
I can't distinguish.
Well, sometimes on a pizza box, because pizza boxes actually work really well for this, one person will take a marker and say, "Do not eat Dean," and write that on there, and then put it on
their half.
Well,
I would never eat Dean. Well, I'm Dean. I can't eat myself. I would eat the pizza.
Yeah. Clearly nuances is lost in you. We'll have to revisit this at the. Well, I didn't pause long enough. There was a comma there.
Oh,
although it might have looked like a smudge.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes
I thought it was a mushroom.
Well, and I know I can understand why you'd be confused. The pizza box often has a lot of writing on it already.
Yes.
So you probably just thought like, oh, that's kind of weird. It's like hand scrawled pizza stuff.
Yeah.
Why did they cheap on the the logos for their pizza boxes? But it wasn't actually a pizza logo. It was telling you not to.
Okay. Well,
to eat the pizza.
We can revisit this sometime soon.
All right. Fair enough.
We'll get you a roommate who cares.
Yes, a robot roommate who cares.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's been about it for this podcast.
That's all of it.
That's all of it. This is the end. And
that's a movie we mentioned.
It is a movie we mentioned, which I don't know if it's streaming or not. But you know, you have the internet. If you're watching these shows, you got the internet.
You could Google it. Look it up
on the Googles. I have been Ed.
I'm always Dean.
He's always Dean, the ever present. This is Prime Flicks, and if you want to, I don't know, listen to a couple other episodes, There are more than one other episode of this podcast.
PrimeFlixPod.com.
You can go to PrimeFlixPod.com. Thank you, Dean. Did you just find that? You sounded surprised.
Yeah, I was Googling. Googling. And I found some websites.
What else did you find?
Well, if you click on the sidebar, there's a little audio thing.
Oh, what does that do?
Well, it calls us.
It calls us?
It says, hey, here's an audio message from me.
Nice.
Look, I'll record one right now.
Okay.
Hey, Prime Cast, this is me, Dean, your co-host, and not the guy who lives on your couch, but same guy. And I got really flustered there. I didn't know what to say.
In high pressure situations, you can crack sometimes.
Yeah, but the point is, I could leave a message, or our listeners could leave a message.
Now, when you were Googling, did you find anything else on the website? Like, if they didn't want to leave an audio message, but they still wanted to get a hold of us.
Oh, yeah. There's this email.
Email. Is that?
Or a mail?
Email. Maybe the E's silent. It's just mail.
It's mail.
Mail.
Well, there's a link.
Uh-huh.
You click it.
Okay.
And it gives you the email address.
Okay.
And that's feedback at primeflixpod.com.
Feedback at primeflixpod.com. If they wanted to just like leave us a review, or they wanted to say, hey, great job, guys, or hey, how do you know if pizza is yours or not? That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They could ask us that. And then maybe even like on social networks like Twitter.
The tweets.
Yeah, they at PrimeFlix on the tweets.
I can only assume.
Yeah, and so they could follow us there.
Yeah.
We're on iTunes. If they like what they hear, they could just like write a review.
That's a great idea.
If you write a review,
can I write a review?
You could write a review, but you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, that.
I mean, that's kind
astroturfing. Astroturfing.
Yeah, you don't really want to. We shouldn't do that, but. You know, we could ask them to, because if they do it, then that will actually do via iTunes, you know, complicated algorithms and,
that's a great idea.
Smoke
you should
screens.
Ask them to.
Yeah. So, guys, I don't know if you got all of that, but if you go to iTunes, you write us a review, regardless of what you think, you can say whatever you want.
Well, only if it's good.
I mean, if it's good, it's good, you know.
Right.
If it's not, it's still good in a way.
Sure.
Because it gets us more exposure. So... Mm-hmm. iTunes says, hey, someone reviewed it. They must like this or think it's at least divisive.
Divisive.
And, you know, it'll get more people exposed to it. Might want to check it out.
You know, leave us a good one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So yeah, so do that. And any of those things that Dean mentioned or I mentioned, just go for it. And, we'll be back with a future episode. Relatively soon. We try to do these weekly. We'll see what we come up with.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You can't know. I mean, where am I going to be living next week? I don't know.
Yeah. It's where are any of us going to be next week?
It's a good point.
Yeah. So, till next time, we see you again. We'll see you on the internet.